on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
These guys have earnings coming up next week.
Then you got the labor. I mean, the labor here is tremendous. I mean,
15.3% is the number, which is alarming.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
Well, welcome to Tuesday afternoon, everyone. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Thanks very much for tuning in. I certainly appreciate that. We'll talk to Kelly Leonard a little bit later in the show, the host of the podcast Getting to Yes And. He applies the lessons of improv, really, when it comes to personal communications, but also in the world of business. And a little bit later after that in the program, we'll talk to the host of The Daily Gist. Amy Guth will be here. You just heard Kim Gordon talk about the fact that the Chicago Fire have decided to make the move. They're coming back to Soldier Field after a brief dalliance of, I think, 10 years or so in Bridgeview, but the Chicago Fire coming back. We start usually on Tuesdays with John Najarian, who, of course, is one of the hosts of the Halftime Report. You can see him most afternoons on CNBC, right? I should say most mornings, right around 11 o'clock. And then right at noon on Tuesday, he runs to a phone, picks it up, dials us, and says, hello. Hello, John Najarian.
Hello, Steve Bertrand. How are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. And it looks like the market, well, I don't know if it's doing well, but it's certainly better than it was earlier in the morning.
Yeah. You know, any day when we have that much on the trade front, I mean, it was, you know, about China and their reaction to some Muslim minority members of China that the U.S. lashed out at them about. And then, of course, the president basically put a bunch of firms on the blacklist,
right,
for spying and other types of activities. And that's just a day ahead of the scheduled several-day meeting.
Okay, John, unpack that for me.
That faded pretty fast.
Unpack that for me a little bit, the blacklist. So this wasn't about the trade dispute. This was peripheral to that, or was it, wink, wink, peripheral to that and really was about the trade dispute? Explain that for me.
Okay, so there's a company called, I want to say High Tech. It's a Chinese company, and they buy a lot of, for instance, chips from Ambarella. And one of the problems with that is that they do a lot of, they're involved in an awful lot of security firms, this Chinese firm is, and thus their chips are used across the globe as people use these for cybersecurity and other. And that was a huge problem because the Commerce Department placed those 28 Chinese government and commercial organizations onto what they call an entity list, people that are involved in security bureaus across the country as well as across the world. Anyway, bottom line, they basically shut a lot of these guys down, and you can't do business with them if they're on that list. That was a significant blow to Ambarella, AMBA, and that's why that stock was down so much.
And I think there was a Bloomberg report that they might limit some Chinese companies when it comes to American pension funds, right? Alibaba and others?
Right. And it's not so much us limiting them. It's U.S. pension funds being basically blocked from having investments in those Chinese companies. So, in other words, if you've got a pension that comes from the government in one way, shape, or form, and that's got to be tens of millions of people, you could no longer, if indeed that's put into law, you could no longer invest in Alibaba, BABA, or Baidu, BIDU, or JD.com, which is symbol just JD. So all of those stocks were impacted by that by about 2.5%. But again, that's more of a speculative short because we don't know. That has not been enacted yet. So that's just speculation that it will be. And frequently, these are just kind of put out there as trial balloons, and we don't know if they're actually going to be following through on that.
All right. So you said there's a lot of news when it comes to China and trade. Those are a couple of things. There were a couple of others. So then there was some reporting that the Chinese weren't sending a quote unquote special envoy to Washington, that it was something lesser, if not the same person, but a different title, indicating maybe they weren't so serious about these talks this week. Then another quasi-official media outlet in China said, no, 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 we're very sincere about this. I mean, what do you make of that? Is that having an impact, too?
Yes, that made an impact early on, and that was when the market was down about 350 points. But now that China Global Times, which is their, you know, their head propaganda newspaper, you and I could call it propaganda.
Right.
Other people would just say that's just the newspaper. but it is controlled, of course, by China, unlike our news, which is not controlled by the government. And they said that the China will be sending the full delegation. And so, as you say, that's when the market trimmed some of those losses, because at least there's still that hope that some sort of a deal could be struck. But we'll see how the rest of the day today plays out. We've got Jay Powell coming our way in about 45 minutes from now, talking about interest rates and the U.S. economy.
All right. One more. Kristalina Georgieva, who is the new IMF managing director, spoke as well ahead of a meeting coming up in Washington later this year. She says that the trade war could have a global economic impact of $700 billion by the end of next year or by 2020. You know, I think if you ask most of us around here, we don't seem to be feeling it too directly. Are others, or, I mean, tell me about that $700 billion number.
Well, I think a lot of the European countries have already felt a significant bite from the trade tensions, trade war. And I believe she even wanted to call it a trade peace. She said, you know, I'm hoping we move towards a trade peace. That same lady that you're referencing about these particular impact of $700 plus billion. So again, it's perhaps a little early to say that this is a sure thing. It's more of a, if you guys go there, this is what the result could be.
Okay.
And we're hoping that we can avoid that result.
So sort of like mom holding out the bottle of medicine saying, if you don't get better, you're going to have to take this castor oil.
Exactly. And I was going to use exactly that, castor oil, because it's so foul.
That says something about us, John. I don't know what it is yet. So we talk a lot about Boeing. Obviously, Boeing drove the Dow in past years. It's having a rough year this year, and they're out with delivery numbers now. Delivered 302 aircraft in the first 9 months of the year, down almost 50%. I've asked you before, but I mean, is there going to be a point where Boeing doesn't recover?
Well, no. Okay. In my mind, anyway, there's less than a 1% chance that Boeing will not recover. The backlog is still in the double-digit billions of dollars for their jets. And you really, you know, in this duopoly, you really don't have much choice. If you left the Boeing queue and went over
right.
into Airbus,
right.
you're going to the back of another double-digit billion line queue. And that means you're probably pushing out a delivery of a jet as much as 6 or 7 years into the future. So, and a lot of the pilots that we've talked to recently indicate that they think that the lack of training among the pilots in these two accidents, tragedies, was at least as responsible as Boeing was. In other words, the right seat, the co-pilot in the Ethiopian jet crash, I believe, only had 200 hours
uh-huh.
in a jet. And if you've got somebody with that little experience, I mean, that person wouldn't qualify to fly for SkyWest in the right seat, let alone a Boeing 737 in the United States. But, you know, standards are different in different countries.
Domino's earlier today, I mentioned to people on the air, I was watching you talk about Domino's this morning on the halftime report. Started out down, right? I mean, they sort of eased down on their expectations, but they've recovered now since the opening bell?
Dramatically. In fact, DPZ, that's the symbol for Domino's, they came out with earnings that just barely missed both on profit and sales. and the stock was just hammered. It fell all the way down to 227 this morning. Then it began climbing back out of that hole, and right now it's 252. So that's a huge jump to the upside. It's up $10 as we're speaking, and a lot of that was because their CapEx, or the amount of money that they're telling people they're going to spend on stores and so forth, they reduced that dramatically. They increased a share buyback, initiated a new one of almost 10% of their shares that they could buy back. So they may have done something similar to what Facebook did when they announced a significant share repurchase when their stock fell.
I had to laugh. I see Raymond James listing Target as a strong buy. You just have to go to Target and see how filled the shopping lanes are, I think, with, well, a lot of people who I know, to know that Target's doing pretty well.
You're 100% right. And the other part of that one is that Toys R Us, they're going to be the fulfillment for Toys R Us. In other words, the people that are still operating that brand, okay, Toys R Us, are going to rely on Target because they don't have stores, Toys R Us. Instead, they'll rely on Target to deliver the toys that people order. So that is a big plus for Target.
All right, those are some of the active stocks today. What are you watching, John?
Okay, well, we were buying today shares of XEC because of unusual activity in that particular name. I mean, XEC, it got down to a level that we thought was attractive. I made it my final trade on the show, and that's one that we're pretty happy about.
John
Najarian. We've been here before, and we're happy with it.
Listen, John from CNBC, follow him at John Najarian on Twitter as well, and the Najarian Family Offices. Great talking to you. I appreciate it today.
Thank you, sir.
It's 12:24. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Kelly Leonard is in the studio. He's the host of the podcast Getting to Yes And. Kelly, welcome back.
Thanks, Steve.
Okay, so, well, a lot of times when we have these conversations, we're talking with what, psychologists or
academics,
researchers,
or CEOs,
right? And we talk about the ability for improv or different approaches to business and how that helps.
Right.
A little different this week.
Yeah, definitely.
You your guest on the podcast is Rami Nashashibi.
You got that right.
Who is a local boy who we should know about?
Yes, right.
Right. Yeah.
I heard about him on the On Being podcast, another podcast that I listened to, and I was like, who is this guy? He was so brilliant the way he was talking about diversity and inclusion and equity, all these things that have become very important in business, especially in HR. And it turns out he's a MacArthur Genius grantee. He's a 2018 Opus Prize laureate. He received a PhD in sociology from the University of Chicago, and he runs a thing called the Inner City Muslim Action Network. Guess what? It's here in Chicago.
And he's under our, is he under everyone's radar or just under our radar? The privilege.
I don't know. I mean, you know, when I went searching, right, I found some articles in the New York Times, but I only found a couple things in Chicago papers, and you realize, and this is an old song, but we really still do have kind of two Chicagos, if not four Chicagos, that we're living in.
Well, tell me about what it is that he does.
Yeah, so he runs this organization that is, he had a thing when he was at the University of Chicago studying these amazing ideas that he would see, and I'll quote him. He says, at the University of Chicago, I had the space to think about extraordinary ideas, and then I would go back to the community where sometimes those ideas seem so disconnected and irrelevant to the day-to-day struggles. So he's trying to bring these ideas to his neighborhoods. He just created a safe house where people who are in the crosshairs of gang violence can get out of the community and have a chance to sort of live and learn a new trade. He works with local businesses, at-risk youth. They really are about taking these ideas of how do we upset violence and poverty in these different communities that look so different from the Hyde Park around the University of Chicago. So he's a really fascinating figure.
Executive director of the Inner City Muslim Action Network, and yet he says that it's not necessarily a religious organization. Explain that for me.
Yeah, I talked about this because I said, you say you're spiritually rooted, but broadly informed. And it got into a talk about his childhood. And so he's an immigrant from Palestine, who was a big fan of hip hop music.
Yeah.
And I talked in one of our conversations was I said, look, I grew up in Kenilworth, Illinois, big fan of hip hop music at about the same time because we're close in age.
Yeah.
And so how are these things coming together? You go, well, so that's just the point, right? We have our own spiritual traditions, but if we are wise, we connect with these other traditions and incorporate them into our own narrative. So if you look at the history of social organization on the south side of Chicago, right? That's Black and Jewish. That Saul Alinsky, right? And
right.
And others, the work of Malcolm X.
I think they were called radicals by some.
They were called radicals by some.
Yeah.
And some people, yeah, I mean, but they were looking to upset a certain kind of order. And guess what? They kind of did it, certainly partially. So he really learned, he has learned himself to be aware of what he doesn't know, and to seek out these other traditions, and have conversations with them. And I think in the world we live in now, where we tend to want to do a lot of blocking and building up walls, maybe a better way is having more conversations with each other, especially those people who look different from us.
I want to go back to the idea of the two of you listening to the same hip hop LP at the same time.
Yeah.
In very different life positions, but in similar life stages.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of an interesting thing to me, that what you were hearing, the same words, same music, compared to what he was probably hearing.
And the album that we were bonding over was Fear of a Black Planet by Public Enemy. And so you think of this like Palestinian immigrant.
Right.
What does he have in touch with that? And you think of this like, you know, Catholic kid and white kid in Kenilworth. But they were talking about fairness and truth and ideals that we were learning about in our high school and college classes, right? But they look very different when you put them into the world as is. So the overlying thing in this conversation I think is fascinating is, like, it's not that those ideas of the ivory tower are wrong or bad. It's just that they don't always work in practicality in the world as it exists now. So we need to kind of learn both things when we go into these communities.
Kelly Leonard is the host of the podcast Getting to Yes And. So just briefly then, how does what you've learned from him apply to the business world?
So a couple things I thought of. Well, one was, we talk a lot about D&I, and almost every business has a diversity and inclusion program. That's got to be more than about reading, you know, essays and books.
Right.
You need to meet people where they live. And after we hung up on the podcast, I had said to Rami that Second City over the years has many times tried to start like a theater on the South Side. And it's never really worked because it's never felt authentic. And I said, after our conversation, I wonder if what we need to do at Second City is simply ask you if we can come to you, listen generously about the issues and ideas and needs that you have, and perhaps working together, we can find some collaborative solutions. And he said, yes, let's do that.
Check out the podcast. It's at WGNradio.com. Kelly Leonard, great to see you again.
Great to see you.
Thanks very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Okay, thrift stores, right? That's the big thing. Everyone is a Marie Kondo. Everyone's overwhelming thrift stores by cleaning their closets and bringing things back. And I know with my kids and others, it's a popular place to shop. So let's go to the South Suburbs and the Restoration Ministry thrift stores. There are two of them, I think one in South Howland and one in Harvey. Todd Schultz is the CEO of Restoration Ministries. Liz Rolden is here as well, who oversees these thrift stores. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll talk about what happens with the money, but first talk to me about the idea, Todd, of these thrift stores and how it is you've come to run these two mammoth sort of stores.
Well, Restoration Ministries was formed in 1988 as a faith-based ministry dedicated to serving men and women suffering from substance abuse. And we wanted to make sure that these programs were self-supporting. So we came up with the idea of starting thrift stores, and it has just grown beyond our wildest imagination. As you mentioned, now we have two stores, one in Harvey, Illinois, and one in South Howland, Illinois.
And also an eBay page, right?
And an eBay page as well, yes.
And so what kind of money do you bring in with these thrift stores?
Oh, these stores, they generate about $2 million worth of sales a year. And all the profits from those go to support the programs that we offer to the adults and kids in our programs.
I'm getting a little ahead of myself maybe, but Liz Rolden is here. And Liz, you oversee the thrift stores?
Correct. I'm the general manager of the stores. And they started about 30 years ago, the original store in Harvey, as a means to not take just donations from
right.
people, but a way for the ministry to generate income to support it.
So tell me a little bit about yourself then and your path and how it is where you started with the ministries and how it is now that you oversee these stores.
Okay, I came into Restoration Ministries as a resident of the program of Tabitha House for Women a little over 11 years ago. I completed the program.
Tabitha House is a home for women with addiction.
Correct, coming from a addiction background,
right,
correct.
Okay.
I had been to other programs before that didn't work. This is a long-term Christian-based program, which is 12 to 18 months. It gives you the time to find yourself again because you get lost out there in addiction.
I
could get clean, but I couldn't stay clean. And Restoration Ministries was pivotal for that.
You made it through. And then, Todd, so the part of this then is with the graduates of these programs, and there's a Harvey House for men?
Yes, there is.
And then they go on to work at the thrift shops?
Yes. Throughout their 18-month program, we're giving them job training. Some of them end up working for us in various positions. As you mentioned, Liz here is the general manager of our thrift stores. Ray Banks is the vice president of our residential programs. He was a graduate from 30 years ago. So it's important to us to identify talent and use them within our organization.
So Liz, did you have training that would lead you?
I did. I came from management.
Oh, you did?
I had a management background.
Okay.
I managed medical practices, but never retail. And I ended up accepting a position as a manager of the store and worked my way up to store manager and then to GM.
And so the thrift store sales fund, what, 50% of the houses?
Yes, about 50% of our operating budget funds an assortment, the residential drug rehab program.
Right.
But also a whole bunch of kids programs in the Harvey and South Holland communities.
And so tell me a little bit about some of the other things you do then.
We offer after-school programs and day camps. We operate a state-of-the-art boxing facility in Harvey, as well as an art and music center. On Saturdays, our gymnasium transforms into a food bank, serving 100 families in the Harvey neighborhood. And on Sundays, the boxing club transforms into a women's and children's shelter for homeless women.
So, Liz, what percentage of customers, tell me about your customers that come in. So are they there to help the community? Are they there because they need to buy things secondhand? Or are they there because, like so many of us, they now know that it's kind of cool to buy things secondhand?
All of the above.
Yeah,
we
yeah.
have people that come from all over. We actually have somebody who drives in once a month from Florida.
What?
Yes, drives in once a month from Florida and buys furniture, loads up, and
resells it
back, it? Yeah, takes it back
no
to Florida.
Wow.
So we have a lot of people who will come in who like to rehab furniture. They look for antiques. We could at any given time have mid-century furniture to whatever. So we have a lot of people who come in. They're treasure hunting, and they're looking for the deals.
How many people work in the two stores?
We have about 27 paid employees between the two stores and the truck routes. And then we have, I would say, anywhere from 50 volunteers that come in on a regular
so
basis.
So I guess my point of contention, how many of them have gone through the program?
We have we probably have about 10 people from the program that actually work for us. It might be more than that.
But I guess the question I'm getting at roundabout is, it's one thing to run a business. It's another thing to run a business with fragile lives that are at mm-hmm. fragile moments in their lives. And so tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I think that's part of the uniqueness of Restoration Ministries, because it's not just a one-stop shop. Because it takes it takes more than just going through a program and completing it. You need that aftercare. You need that connection. You need the people surrounding you and walking with
right.
you. So I think that's where Restoration Ministries is unique. And even the church that's, I'm going to give a shout out to Spirit of God Fellowship, which is our church. Yeah. And I am going to, it's the people of the church that walk with us and hold us accountable and know us. And that's the beauty of the program is they get to know the people. And so, you know, they're walking with them and they're for them.
What percentage of the sales come, I'll ask either of you, of eBay versus in person?
I would say eBay makes a good, I would say about 150 grand to 200 grand a year.
Okay.
Out of the 2 million.
Yeah, out of the 2 million.
So it's still, it's mostly
foot It just
traffic.
Depends on what we get and, you know,
right.
What we're putting online for
okay.
sale.
Okay, so I'm walking into the store in South Holland.
Mm-hmm.
Where am I going to find the best deals? Is it on furniture or what is it?
We sell a lot of furniture.
Yeah.
And I would say that... on the sale days, we see a lot of people coming in specifically looking for furniture to furnish their home.
That is Rob, or Todd Schultz, I should say, and Liz Brolden. Todd is the CEO of Restoration Ministries. Liz is a graduate of the programs that help the people. It's just a wonderful sort of equation, I guess. You know, people go out, get a deal at a secondhand store, and then you back it up, and there are people living in these homes, Liz, as you did, for 12 to 18 months and really genuinely benefiting from it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's rare. You know, we talk a lot about nonprofit sustainability. It can be a challenge to actually make that work.
Right.
This is one of those examples where we're combining enterprise, social enterprise with nonprofit, and it's actually working.
I guess it all depends on how you measure profit, right? Because it looks like there are big profits coming here.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Coffee is one of the best things that's ever happened to an office, and arguably the world. And for those who have been on the beat of the progress of one of the biggest coffee shops in the country, you might know this, but for everyone else, good news about the Starbucks Roastery on the Mag Mile. The new opening date for the 42,000 square foot roastery is on November 15th at 9 a.m. sharp. They bumped up the opening day an hour early because, like me, they probably just can't wait.
Coffee.
It's one of the great things about being here in Chicago. And in case you don't believe me, Chicago won the top spot on the best big city list from Condé Nast. 600,000 U.S. readers voted, and they decided that we're the best. And you might want to ask the 57.6 million visitors the city got last year, up from 4.3%. Minneapolis came in second, and Boston took third. But let's just take a moment to cherish the accolade, and as the holiday season rounds the corner, hope that we keep attracting those millions of visitors and beat out all those other big cities. Yeah! I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thank you, Steve. It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Amy Guth is in the studio. She's the host of the podcast, The Daily Gist from Crane Chicago Business, comes by on most days to give us a little bit of a preview. And, well, I notice you're wearing your soccer cleats today, which is
that's right.
It's not just a fine fashion accessory. It applies to our conversation.
That's right. Well, in perhaps what is the worst kept
secret, right?
It was like an announcement that we all knew was coming. The Chicago Fire is officially moving back to Soldier Field. Their first game will be March 21st, 2020 against Atlanta United.
So they've been playing in Bridgeview for the better part of 10 years, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
They built the stadium for them out there.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like a pretty big financial hit, but, you know, there's 61,000 seats at Soldier Field. Joe Mansueto seems very confident that he's going to fill them all. He said that's a big priority to him. He also said that in Major League Soccer, he felt like, you know, he felt like Chicago Fire was this sleeping giant, just ready to go.
Explain that for me. What do you mean?
Well,
because I think they do. I don't know if you know off the top of your head, but I think their attendance, they do pretty well out in Bridgeview.
Yeah, I think they do. Yeah. But he felt like, I think as a team and as far as local support, he felt like we had the potential to just be this huge thing and play all the cities, do all the things. He's feeling very ambitious about it. But, you know, that's kind of cool. That's fun. It probably will bring more people to it, to you know, there was some parking and traffic and stuff like that, concerns around Bridgeview.
Well, you know, and it's funny because I've been to a couple of games at Bridgeview, and I've, in my head, wanted to go to a lot more.
Yeah.
And I just haven't pulled the trigger on it. The parking there was okay, but it's just, it is kind of a hard place to get to. I don't know if, I mean, I'm assuming it will be easier to get down to Soldier Field. At least the major expressways will all lead there.
I mean, in theory it is, but we've all seen like Bears game time traffic.
Right.
It's a nightmare. So we'll see. But, you know, it's cool to do that. And he's excited and generating a lot of good feelings around it today.
And good for the city and certainly good for the Park District, right? The Park District. Any idea how much cash they'll be bringing in?
You know, I don't have that number right in front of me. There was an earlier story on this on the Gist probably about 2 months ago talking about, you know, this is what they stand to gain, in which I spelled out all of those numbers. But, yeah, kind of. Not really a surprise to anybody, but exciting that it's official.
Yeah, and I remember when they announced they were leaving Bridgeview, which kind of, you know, was a hint that the mayor of Bridgeview tried to put the best spin on it, but now they've got this big stadium out there, and they've got to figure out a way to put people in it.
I'm sure they'll come up with something. Because the mayor did not seem that upset about it, you know, like they got paid. So, you know, there's that. I think there's my guess is there's probably some kind of contingency plan in the works. Who knows what that will be?
They're not going to put a racetrack there, right? The horses aren't going there.
They're not. That's all in Arlington. That's elsewhere. But today on the podcast, I talked with the president of the Illinois Thoroughbred Horsemen's Association. His name is Michael Campbell. And this is a person who's been in this business a long time. His sons are jockeys. He's like, I said, how'd you get into this business?
Right.
He goes, I was born there.
I've been trying to get out.
Right. Three generations. I mean, he's a really interesting person. We had a great conversation. He wrote an op-ed last week in Cranes saying, you know what, the gaming board should play hardball with the Arlington owner, Churchill Downs.
Right.
He's saying, you know, he makes some interesting points in there. And so I talked with him about that today. One of them is by having this out-of-state owner, you're preventing a lot of, a lot of potential revenue here in the state. He's saying you need to make this a racino. It must be. And Churchill's not interested.
They're not interested in putting the casino part because they have Rivers Casino not too far away.
That's right.
So he would have the state forced Churchill Downs
That's what he wants. He's saying, you know what, if you're not going to do this, this is standing in the way of revenue and jobs, and it supports the interests of taxpayers. And it would, you know, by growing jobs and revenue here in the state. So you should force Churchill Downs' hands with Arlington. It was interesting. So I'm looking forward to sharing that conversation a little bit later today.
Did you talk anything about racing in the rest of the state?
A little bit. He mentioned some of the other tracks. He talked a little bit about how, kind of what Churchill does. And he was kind of like, you know, look, at the end of the day, this is a corporation, and I am from a horse family, and this is personal to me. And he really kind of, you know, it's kind of a classic story that we see a lot between a big corporate entity and the mom and pops.
We'll look for it in the Daily Gist this afternoon. Amy Guth.
Thanks so much.